Well, hello everyone, it's Madge, and I've got a special appearance from a special guest, Bicycle Marcus, in Kabul, which is in Afghanistan. Yes. What are you doing there?
Hi everybody, I haven't spoken to gentle audience in a long time. I'm in Kabul. I'm officially working for a organization that monitors elections. I better not name names. They have rules that I don't even know about. Okay. I'm a subcontractor, so I'm not subject to all their rules, but I may be surprised that somebody gets angry. But it's fine. I mean, nobody's giving me a lot of orders or anything. But I'm working with an organization because on the 18th of September, they have elections. And a friend of mine or some friends of mine that I work with or I have done a little work with, they developed some sort of web tools and mobile phone tools that can be used for monitoring elections, basically.
From the hacker people?
Oh. No, actually from the video blogger world.
Huh.
Baghdad Brian, or of Alive in Baghdad.
Yeah.
And he's involved, and we've long talked about collaborating. And so we've been talking about doing this for a while. To be honest, this must sound very bassy, huh? This room.
It's fine.
Sounds very bassy. Okay. So to be honest, I thought it wasn't going to happen. Maybe because in my mind, I was scared mm-hmm. of actually getting this adventure. And maybe also because I was watching the discussions between funding the people who would fund it and our side. And I was just watching these emails thinking, I don't think this is going to work. I don't think they're going to, choose us or something. Mm-hmm. And then at the last minute, they said, you know what? It's on. They told me on Saturday, last Saturday, they told me, you know what? It's on. Can you leave Monday? And it was Saturday. I was on a boat in Amsterdam. And I was like, oh, jeez, I was like, how about Tuesday? Mm-hmm. So on Tuesday, I left for Dubai, which is such a circus, that place. It's I can talk about that actually for quite a while as well. I spent about 2 days there, not even. And I arrived in Kabul. So funny. Yesterday, and here I am in an undisclosed hotel. Oops, I shouldn't have said that either. No, I'm in a place that's cute and pretty cozy, I'm in the middle of the city. I'm actually inside of what's called the Ring of Steel, which is probably just some bullshit military media propaganda to try and act like this particular area is the green zone. Mm-hmm. Only I hope the green zone in Iraq has better security than this place, because I only see Afghani military. I don't see U.S. military. I saw them at the airport a little bit, walking around. But the Afghani military, at least the guys who do the roadblocks, I think that's the police, actually. I should get it right. It's the police.
How's
They're
the
just very yeah. sleepy.
How's the toilet paper?
The toilet paper is thin.
Then is it like a really bad, rough?
You know what? It's not as bad as some of those. Again, we're going to upset some environmental people like myself, but still, it's not as bad as some of that recycled, grayish toilet paper. Mm-hmm. It's still better than that.
Pulpy.
The toilets are funny, though, because every toilet has a, you remember when we were kids, we were a little girl, and next to the sink for the dishes, there was a little hose that would come out of the sink, and for some reason you needed this in case you really needed to squirt.
Oh, yeah, I have one in my house now.
Yeah, they have this next to the toilet.
Oh,
yeah.
How nice.
You're a little girl, one. They have this next to the toilet, and I asked an Afghani friend today, what is this for? Uh-huh. No, wait, I asked a friend who's lived here a long time, and she said, it's for my my junk, she said.
Your junk or her junk?
She said my junk.
Yeah.
Which I think was for the duty.
That's a great idea, because what is it attached to the toilet, or how does it go?
It's right next to the toilet. It's sort of hanging on the wall. Uh-huh. It has a little holster, like a gun, in case it leaks a little. And then you just, I guess, I'm still working on this, really. You just reach over, and it has a long tube, a hose. And it reaches long enough so that you can sort of tuck it, in front of your vag, in your case, mm-hmm. or over your anus, and you can clean it.
That's a wonderful idea. I don't know why we don't have that in America. We just have a bunch of dirty assholes.
It's true. Even in Afghanistan, they're worried about keeping their butts clean, but we are not.
Yeah. So what exactly is what is the significance of this election? Who's being elected and all that?
Yeah, it's weird. It's like their it is their parliamentary elections. Mm-hmm. So they're not choosing a president. They did that last year and they reelected Karzai. Mm-hmm. A lot of people will know that name. Which I thought, okay, if it's just like parliamentary, then that's kind of like in the U.S. with congressional elections, so nobody's going to care. But everybody tells me it's totally the opposite here. Nobody cares about the president. Nobody feels like he's in their lives at all. But when it comes to local politicians, not only do they care, they get super angry. And, you know, there's some discussions that it could get violent or that groups would be violent against other groups. So that's going to be September 18th, parliamentary elections, and I see the posters everywhere. And you would love it, Madge. There's they decided for some reason that each candidate, besides having their name, should also have a symbol, I guess in case you can't read or something. So you can look at the symbol, and you'll know to vote for that symbol. That's the one that you like. So there's one symbol that's like three fishes or two corn or a vest or what else have I seen? Shoes, a light bulb. There's a horseshoe one, and the candidate actually has a horseshoe baldness, which I think is appropriate. Mm. So I just really have a great time looking at all the symbols, and I want somebody to have like a ridiculous symbol, like a dildo candidate.
And is this like you're there to sort of monitor the elections in terms of journalism or to actually help make sure that it's legit or what?
It's even before all of that. That's why I'm here like a little, almost a month before. Well, actually, I arrived a little late, but still the idea is that I get here early because what I'm doing is, I don't think if anybody bothers me about saying this, then I don't want to do this job because I'd like to speak freely. I'm training the people who do this elections observation like for a living. You know, they do this all the time. I've never done anything like that. All I'm doing is explaining to them how to use this software. It's kind of like, I give these workshops where I teach people how to blog or how to use Twitter if they're journalists. Well, now it's just this other piece of software that it's not completely disconnected from blogs and stuff, but it's different. And it allows for, in this case, elections observers to very easily report using their mobile phones because there is mobile internet. There's like an edge network. And so you could use a mobile phone to send an SMS, or in some cases you could use Twitter. We're not going to be. I don't know if I want to get into this. The application will sort this data and make it like put it on a map and categorize it and make it public so that people who, I don't know if they're in the media here or in the U.S., people who were concerned about the elections can watch and also immediately know if there's something weird going on, like violence at the polling place or even just a polling place isn't open. You know, they have to look out for that stuff because there's a lot of dysfunction in this country and there's a lot of things that you'd expect to happen that just aren't happening.
So it's a real-time system. So if there's problems, they'll know right away everywhere. Right? Is that the point?
Close to right away. It's not as, to be honest, we're working on it, or at least we have people working on it. It's not my department. I'm the person who speaks to the big crowds and explains things more easily. But I actually think the real time aspect isn't totally real time. It's delayed a little bit, which is a bummer, I think.
So you're there more in the capacity of, less in the capacity of a journalist, more in the capacity of a facilitator. Is that right?
Yeah. Even like on my visa and stuff. Also because I'm afraid of being pegged as a journalist. It seems very dangerous to me. So I'd rather be considered a teacher or a consultant even though I think consultants are douchebags. But, you know, I'm one.
Only social media consultants.
So, yes, well, I've been that too. Oh, God. But the good part is that for once, you know, because I've had jobs where people don't really understand like what I do with my podcast and stuff like that. But in this case, I'm with people who know me from my podcast, who like it. So they're telling me, you know, look, you have to work a lot. But when you're not working, or, you know, if you catch someone who's interesting, you want to do an interview, you want to you want to write, please do. You know, they love the fact that I'm writing on America blog or on my blog, or I'm going to write some stuff for The Guardian. They enjoy that. They like my style of going somewhere. And even if I'm doing a job, still doing other stuff, doing other journalism, other connections with audiences. So I'm free to do my journalism, which is good.
So what do you, you said you're writing a piece for The Guardian?
I want to, yeah. I mean, I shouldn't write yet for them. I want to give it, because it's so weird, you know, like 2 days here and I already feel like I have all these new theories and new ideas, and it's only 2 days. I'm here for a month.
So, I want to hear your first impressions, because I think those are really interesting. You mentioned something about how it sort of changes your opinion towards being for or against this particular war as opposed to wars in general.
Yeah, it does. You know, and this one thing hasn't changed. I think not only is war terrible, everybody says that, but I would be more radical and say war is never the answer. Okay. And, you know, if you look back on World War II, that's a tough one, but I still think Dresden didn't have to be flattened and plenty of people didn't have to die for us to resolve that. But I don't, you know, it's too late. You know, that already happened.
Well, from what I understand, there were we had plans drawn up to bomb the trains to Auschwitz, and we didn't act on it early enough, so then we ended up.
Right. So I'm just saying this in the beginning that doesn't change. You know, I still do not believe in war at all. I believe that, you know, the wrong people are making money, including possibly myself, because I am getting paid for being here. And it's like there is some very wrong feeling to it. But anyway, never mind me feeling wrong. As I walk around, and I can walk, which I'm surprised. Like, I thought I would have to take taxis, and I thought the taxis would have tinted windows. But no, actually, tinted windows are a bad thing in this town. You'll get pulled over for that because you can't see who's in the car or what they're carrying. And as I've walked around, it's so tense. You know, people look at you, okay, but they'll look at you anywhere in the world. If you go to China, people will look at us because we look different. But the way they look at you is so mixed. Some people look at you just like they've never seen anything like you, which is odd because I look very similar to them. Maybe it's the people I'm with who look a little different. Some people look at you like they can't fathom why you're here. Some people look at you like they hate you. And then it's just, even kids, you know, kids freak me out in this country a little bit. But then just when you think that they're angry or they're going to like totally attach themselves to you begging, they'll just make a joke. Like today, there was these street kids that were following us around. It was very difficult to get rid of them. And I was just being mean. I could not. If you smile, it's weakness, you know. And we had a girl with us, an American girl, and she was just giving them candy so they, you know, kept following us. And one kid at one point looks at me and goes, hey, mister, you want to buy? And he had a map or something. And I just looked at him very seriously. And I was like, no. And he goes, I didn't tell you the price, $6 million. And he smiles. And I looked at him and I said, I will ask the president for the money. You know, and it was the best thing I could think of at the time. And he smiled and he walked away. So it was like, okay. Anyway, never mind the children. As Cheryl would, you know, she'd want to hear more, but never mind the children. On the street, like, I'm just horrified. Like, you hear stories about the Taliban, and I almost feel weird saying the word in this city, although we have these discussions with all the foreigners. This idea that they could just cruise into town and decide to attack you, it's really scary. We were going to go to lunch yesterday. I had just arrived, and I had read in the guidebook, they actually did a Lonely Planet Afghanistan, and I was reading it, and they make reference to a cafe that sounds nice, the Flower Street Cafe. Now, street doesn't mean it's near the street. No cafe is on the street. There's always a wall and like a guard that searches you and a little booth where that guard is 24 hours, and then you go in the cafe and you still have to walk like way deep. So every time you go to a cafe, it's like going into a bunker or some kind of really secure garden.
Yeah.
So anyway, Flower Street Cafe, I never even got to see it. Brian had said to me, let's meet there at like, I don't know, 3. And it was like 2:00. And I was thinking to start, you know, get going early. It's going to take a cab. And all of a sudden an email comes in. Thankfully we have good internet. Well, decent. An email comes in from one of the organizations we work with. And it says, warning just issued by security authority. I've never heard of this, you know. a plot has been, I don't know if it's uncovered or rumors of a plot to attack Flower Street Cafe and kidnap, and it said this, kidnap one male and one female foreign worker. Mm. And furthermore, attack was planned on horseback. I guess because it's hard to drive. There's so many roadblocks. I guess it's hard to drive a car into town. So these guys allegedly were going to come in by horse. And it's just like, I feel powerless. I think everybody feels powerless, but especially I think foreigners also, because we don't know what's going on all the time. So it's like the idea that I would have gone to a cafe and nothing happened, you know, but still, as soon as you read it, you start thinking, holy shit, I would have gone to a cafe and maybe a bunch of really angry guys that don't have much value for my life and I don't think would hesitate much to kill me, except maybe that I'm worth a lot of money. So they'd, you know, bribe my family. My family would grow broke, but maybe they'd get me back. And, you know, all this goes through my head. At the same time, you learn to laugh about it, which is weird. In 2 days, I've learned to laugh about it. So we went somewhere else at the same time, another similar cafe, just different area. And we talked about, you know, how maybe food was half price over at the other cafe, how maybe we should go, you know, and these jokes would give my mother like a heart attack.
Yeah.
But in the end, it is funny, you know, like it has to be. And then there's stuff that's so easy, actually, you know, we have a trusted cab company and we have their phone number and, you know, all of their drivers are cool. We come to know most of them, I think, cause I'm new. And so you trust them. When you tell them you want to go somewhere, you're never getting swindled. They're local, of course. When we come to our cafes that we know or our hotel, there's always a guard standing there with a machine gun. And he's usually actually kind of an old man, which I'm doubting the gun's even loaded, but still there he is 24 hours. And you get a sense of like, you know what, this isn't so bad. And this guy's here and people are watching over us. But every time there's one of those stories you hear about also, like, you know, if you hear about a bombing, there's a bombing a couple of weeks ago before I got here. People told me it was in this neighborhood. I don't know. I haven't seen any evidence. I did walk today on a side street. And the streets are a mess, you know, huge craters and piles of garbage. And on the street, there's a lot of broken tile and glass. But, you know, I've seen that in different places. And we're walking, and I look up in the building. There's a building of about 4 stories, and it has no windows. It's like somebody just removed the windows, and nobody's living in it. And a friend of mine who's lived here for almost a year, she goes, you know what happened here? And I said, a lot of garbage. And she goes, no, this was the site of a suicide bombing. And I looked around, you know, and there's like a shop owner standing outside and there's like kids riding their bikes and over the rubble. And I don't even know if it was true, you know, but she has no reason to lie to me. And I looked around and I could see how, yeah, maybe like a year ago, that was a spot, you know, and we just keep walking. It's stuff like that.
But most of the violence there, I mean, there's not actual fighting going on there, right? It's the most of the violence is the terrorism, Taliban kind of stuff.
Taliban. Yes. To my understanding, now I'm not going to leave. I don't want to leave Kabul. Some people are saying to me, "You got to come see, you know, so and so place outside of Kabul." And although I'm curious, I'm afraid, you know, like at least this is a city and I know where the airport is. Yeah. You know, I feel a false sense of security. We don't get stopped much by roadblocks. Outside of the city, you get stopped all the time. And sometimes the roadblock isn't even police or military. It's just some kids with walkie-talkies. And, you know, maybe they want money. I don't know. You know, these people have a lot of power because you don't know what's going on and you can't argue much. Even if you do argue, it's risky. So the violence, going back to the violence, I was in a little, not a house party. It was just a gathering last night. It was very nice. People are so hospitable. And it was actually a house with not just Afghani journalists, but there was some Iranians. And one guy was looking at photos on his computer. He had his laptop open. And I looked at his photos, and there was U.S. Marines. And he was in some mountainous area, and the U.S. Marines were firing guns, were preparing bases. They were doing things. And he said to me in really crappy English, he's like, I was embed with Marines. And he had just returned from being embedded in the Helmand province, which is known to be a Taliban place. And I'm looking at the photos, and, you know, it's just amazing. You know, he just got back, and you know, there he's Afghani, and he's among them. No, he's Iranian, actually, and he's among them. He said when he told them he was Iranian, they were just like, what? They were all kind of aggressive, like not aggressive, but kind of like, ooh, you're the enemy. And he said, no, I am blacklisted in Iran. Oh, that's good, the military said. So it's funny to meet these people who exist in this world where sometimes they've worked for the U.S. military, sometimes they worked for the U.N., now they don't, you know, maybe they will again. And occasionally someone has a story about the Taliban, and stories, that's the thing. Stories are so scary. You know, I went to Cambodia and I saw evidence and history, and I also heard stories of the Khmer Rouge, who were awful, murderous, you know, ridiculous group. But you know, when I come here and I feel like this was also an awful, murderous group, and they're not even gone. You know, like they're like, still what kind of here, and they. I don't know. Occasionally, someone will start talking about how or who they would kill. So a lot of it is general. You know, no one has said to me, I don't think anybody said to me, my parents or something like that. But they were just describing what the Khmer Rouge, what the Taliban would say. So one Afghan guy, he said to me, I don't want to get him in any trouble. He's very nervous about his safety, but this is the guy. And we were sitting at having dinner, and he said, I'm an educated Afghani, and I'm of a certain group. And I have, you know, and I look a certain way. If they met me and they saw my hair like this, it's long, they would just kill me. And they wouldn't have to ask for permission either.
I thought they liked long hair. What do you mean because his hair's long? I thought they liked long hair. Or is that
he referred to his face. I don't even want to get into his description of his self. He pointed to himself and he said, because he's educated and because I think also because of the way he speaks or something, there would be no discussion. You know, I would get killed. And, you know, that kind of stuff, like
So how many are, how it sounds like the Taliban are very dangerous, but it doesn't sound like they're that numerous. It's just that, am I right? I mean, from what you're describing, it's that they come around in these groups and they are very dangerous, but what is it there? Why is their power so concentrated? I don't understand.
I think one thing that is powerful about this group, and I'll learn more about this as time goes on, but as I look around and I see, you know, and I don't mean to say that Afghan people don't have strength, but I look at the police, I look at the general malaise which people function, especially older, I want to blame the older, and I see how if a small group of people who are disciplined, who are angry or have, you know, any kind of rules that they're going to not only follow, but they're going to make you follow. And I don't see people who are going to I don't think people would stand up and fight. And maybe they can, you know, because they just don't have it in them. I don't know. Maybe this is silly. You know, it's only 2 days. The feeling I get though, is that here we have this group of people, the Taliban, who are organized and who are, you know, even though for bad reasons, they are motivated and they will do shit that others won't. They will act when people wouldn't. And so if they come face to face with average people, I feel like, and I hope I'm wrong, but I feel like average people would kind of go, you know what, I don't want to risk it. I think I'll just see if I can please these people. You know, I kind of see how the Taliban came to power. Okay, now that's really pompous because I've only been here 2 days.
No, that's okay. Sometimes first impressions can be very interesting. And then they can change. But sometimes I think it's interesting to hear them because you can be wrong, but you could also be right.
Yeah, so I heard a friend of mine. She said she's not Afghani, but she loved this place, and she was talking somewhere. She said, you know, I just don't like when people say flat out, you know, regular statement says I am against this war. You know, I'm against this war. Everybody home, and it's like. For her, for this girl, she thinks of all the people that she's met and heard about as well. She works with mostly local people whose lives were, you know, destroyed or otherwise, well, made horrible. And she says, you know, like, don't tell me that you know, this place, that you can just leave this place and then leave these people. I mean, this is horrible, you know, and it's not finished. And, you know, so I kind of get what she's saying. You know, she was saying, like, I don't, you can be against violence and against war crimes and even war, but don't tell me, like, just troops out.
Yeah.
Because it's much more complicated than that. And I have a newfound respect for that. You know, I don't want troops home tomorrow.
Yeah.
I mean, not even when I'm gone, you know, just because I'm here, I'm a little selfish. I'm like, oh, I hope I see troops. Now, troops can be scary too. I realize that, you know, when we see Afghan military, maybe so far I haven't had a problem, but they could stop us. They could bother us. I feel like they're getting paid, like their salaries are getting paid. So they're not trying to really skim off people, at least not in the city, which is good, I think. But so far, and again, I'll probably change my mind, but I take comfort when I see the military on the corners, because I feel like if something suddenly happens, maybe I could turn to these guys, you know, maybe, you know, I'm just looking for help because I feel like I can't defend myself against such, you know, power. Like, yeah, it's
odd.
Do
you think this power was there, like, before? Is there any sort of thing that's coming up in your mind about 9/11 and our justification for being there in the first place? I mean, I know what you're saying about, you know, that you can't just pull out and that sort of thing. But...
Yeah.
No,
it's weird, right? Because it seems to me, well, this place has been, you know, Kabul was a dump, if I may, and a war. I was talking to a guy who was here in the 90s. 96, actually, he was here when the Taliban took power. I'm going to try to get him on the podcast. And he was like, I said, did this city used to function better before the Taliban? And he goes, oh, no. What you see, it's, you know, open sewers and stuff like that. Yeah, it was the same. Less foreigners, actually, of course. And then, you know, no one believed the Taliban would take over, and then they did.
What year was this?
96. That was his last year, anyway. He wanted to stay on. And that was a funny thing, too. He didn't want to run. I don't think I have the courage of a lot of, like, old-school journalists because, I don't know, at some point I would run. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the September 11th thing. For me, it's like Al-Qaeda. I don't even think of Al-Qaeda. You know, what bothers me here is a group of people who could take power and destroy people's lives with these maxims, with these rules that just say, like, anything weird, anything different, never mind religion, because a lot of stuff that they don't like has no justification in religion. Like, for example, the zoo. Someone was talking about having visited the Kabul Zoo. I should probably do that. And they said, like, there were, you know, there's hardly anything there. And that the story goes that the Taliban, when they went to the zoo, they would just shoot, like, rocket-propelled grenades at elephants. And I said, was the elephant kind of like against the religion somehow? And a friend said to me, you know, and I don't know if he's a Taliban expert, but he said, no, man, these guys were like kids, you know, and they did irrational, crazy things. And the elephant was not, there was no religious justification. You just,
yeah, I was going to say, you it sounds, like, it sounds like something kids would do.
Yeah.
Like shooting BB guns.
Yeah. Except,
are these a lot of
and
kids?
That's the thing, I think it's,
I mean, in the Taliban, how old are these people? I always think of them as these, like, middle-aged guys.
They could definitely be middle-aged and older, but the mentality is not necessarily wise and old. You know, it's we have power. But what I'm saying is, you know, it's not always about the religion, actually. It's just about people who think, well, people who have the power, and then, okay, religion may be the justification, but it goes way beyond that, and they start doing things that has nothing to do with the religion, of course. The kids thing is funny, you know, so I had the good fortune of meeting one of the girls that works with us, or one of the people who works with us is a girl, and there aren't many girls I find in general, and she's been here a while, and she said, I don't remember why, but she just said, the mentality of an Afghan, the average, because we know exceptional Afghans here, but the average Afghan man towards women is one of a 13-year-old, and I said, 13-year-old, so they don't have the nerve to look at you? And she goes, well, some of that, but also, you know, ooh, look at her, you know, kind of look, and also that you're kind of, I don't know, she compared it to 13-year-olds. Now I'm losing the whole comparison.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about that, like, what if men looked, you know, looked at the people they were attracted to as with the sort of mind of a 13-year-old, you know, what danger is there and what would that look like?
Especially if they're repressed, you know, 13-year-olds that are, you know, with guns.
Exactly. Yeah. And if they grew up with, you know, in a war, a constant state of war, a constant state of, you know, I hate that person. I can't even explain it because it's so complicated, but I've already in 48 hours met someone, spent a little bit of time with someone who has a problem. I wish I can go into specifics, because another family or some brothers from another family heard about something that happened between him and a girl, which they find unacceptable, and they're threatening his life.
Who is that?
These friends, these ex-friends of his, they're threatening his life, they're threatening him, and basically he's going to disappear for a little while, for everyone's sake, for his and for ours, and we won't see him. And I think it's so weird. I said, isn't this just a case of some people who hate you, some other, you know, some kids, they're all like 20-something, but okay, and they're going to, you know, threaten you, but they're not going to do anything, not anything extreme. And he said, I'm afraid for my family. I'm afraid for you guys, because if you're seen with me, and I'm afraid for me. And he said, so I'm going to lay back, and I'm, you know, you won't see me. And I was like, are you going to, like, leave the country? And there was no real answer to that. He said, no. And, you know, maybe this is just someone who's a bit dramatic, but the seriousness which this person spoke, and it's true, you know, disappeared. I'm not going to see him. Over a family rivalry, and we're not even talking about the Taliban. We're just talking about now rival families. And he said the conflict went way back to Civil War times when people from his group, I don't know if it's, I don't think it's ethnic, I think it's families, killed people from the other group, from their group.
Sounds like a family feud.
And so their group hates him, you know, decades later. But apparently this family feud is on a mass scale. So that's the other thing. I'm talking about the Taliban at first because they're the ones that scare me most. But I'm noticing that, and I'll see it during the elections, that these groups of people who have different, I don't know, histories.
Well, it sounds like you're talking about the tribes, aren't you?
Grudges. Yeah. I don't know much about the tribes. Shamefully, you know, I have to learn. And that's another thing. This is a big crash course. I mean, this is a very complex country. I've been to places that it didn't take me long to have a decent understanding of who is who. And then here I'm just, I constantly just shut up and listen because it's just a whole lot of information. It's very complex. And that's another reason why I start to think, you know, you can't come to this country. Say you're a military and you want to help, you want to police, because I'm in favor of foreign military helping train people, and, you know, as police, because these people are criminals, the people who want to kill each other or kill others just for whatever crazy reasons. They're not, I mean, terrorists are terrorists, but they're criminals. So what I want is, we need good investigators and good protectors, and I don't even know if that's military as much as it's, you know, well-trained police. And in the meantime, okay, military. I got lost, sorry.
Is this like a mafia situation? Because, I mean, with, you know, that being the biggest country for exporting heroin, and you mentioned Helmand Province, I think that's where most of it comes from.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw some of the photos I saw that the guys were sharing had poppy fields.
So is this a big organized crime thing? I mean, is that why it's so...
I don't think so.
No?
It's not even that simple. No, I don't think so. I don't know. I'll keep an ear out and I'll ask related questions, but I feel like this is a whole mix. There's ethnicities, you know, there's Uzbeks here, and I don't even know yet. I've heard Uzbeks mentioned a lot. I don't know if people like them or don't like them or what they're known for. I'm sure there's something. you know, we drove down a street and there were all these big fancy houses, which is impressive to see in this town where very little is fancy. And I said, you know, whose houses are these? And they're like, oh, warlords. Some Uzbek, some Afghan. I'm like, oh, so warlords just live in the center of the city. I'm like, yeah, of course.
What exactly is a warlord?
Yeah, they're friends. Well, what I didn't ask at the time, but what I think of is the people that helped get rid of the Taliban, because remember that there was this group called the Northern Alliance, mm-hmm. and in my limited understanding of things, the Northern Alliance was a group of warlords. The only good part was they weren't, you know, religious extremists, murderers. They were just general, you were run-of-the-mill scumbags who agreed to cooperate, you know, to take back the country, and who would probably tolerate a certain extent of freedom and rights in exchange for letting them keep, I don't know, money and power and influence. We have our warlords. They just don't use guns, I guess, you know, BP or whoever.
What, you know, when you said the Taliban took power in, what, 96? I guess I thought it was earlier, but so what was there between the Soviets and the Taliban? Chaos?
I've read it once or twice. I don't know 100%. It was, I'm not going to open it up now, but it was, there was an elected government of some kind, but it was, I don't think it controlled the whole country. And I think there was, that's what they referred to as the Civil War before. So there was some kind of elected government. I know that when the Taliban came to power, they hung a former communist president, or his party was communist. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Okay. There was some kind of government before.
What does it smell like there? Or in general?
Yeah.
That always interests me when I visit places, because places smell different, especially when they're older. Yeah. Like, I can't tell you, but I know what Amsterdam smells like when I go.
Me too. Yeah. When I went to Mongolia in April, that smell of that city, of the capital city, really stuck with me. Yeah. And I know the smell of Newark, where I grew up.
Ooh,
very well.
Me too. Factories. Ooh, horrible.
Yeah. Smell like farts.
Who needs
it's kind of
smoke?
Fascinating, actually. Like when you smell your own farts. You
know? Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's true. That's how Newark is for me. But this place has a mix, especially because I was walking a lot today. It's so weird to actually be able to walk. It feels like we shouldn't, but we do. And it smells kind of like dust. It's like you can smell the dust. Food cooking a bit, and sometimes sewage. The smell of sewage is pretty strong, I guess, because I was in a car. And otherwise, the air is very polluted.
Sewage, did you say?
A lot of exhaust. Yeah, sewage. Sometimes I was walking, and I swore I smelled shit, and I thought I would see dog shit. But I think it was human shit. Like, I didn't see it specifically. It was just this gray matter coming out of certain, you know, ditches.
Is there a problem with their infrastructure as far as sewage and electricity and water? There is.
Yeah, yeah. Garbage disposal, there's hardly any. I just see piles of garbage. I guess every now and then someone must take something, but my friends were joking today that no, that there's no garbage service. I think they're wrong.
Is there a lot of disease because of that?
Not in the city. I don't know how there isn't. I don't hear of any. I mean, hepatitis. I heard hepatitis is an issue. Apparently not for me, as long as I don't know. I guess they don't expect us to really walk around. They just expect you to be in taxis all the time. I don't want anything in the smell. Well, there's a lot of cars.
Yeah.
There's a lot of traffic during the day. And so it's very exhaust-like. Like today when the sun was going down, I couldn't see anything because there was this thick layer of I don't know what in the air. And it wasn't fog. It was just smog. And you needed the headlights even though it was still light outside. At night it's so hard to see, and it's not because it's dark, but because it's like the air has dust and exhaust in it. It's among the worst air in the world, I think. Another reason
is it loud
here for more than a month.
Is it loud or is it noisy?
No, it's not. It's not loud. It's so quiet outside right now. It's the middle of the night, and there's roadblocks on either side of the street, so everyone has to slow down. In that sense, I guess their ring of steel is a good thing because people slow down.
It's like a cock ring.
They honk a lot. Cock ring of steel.
What about animals? Do you see a lot of animals running around?
I've seen, every time I'm at a cafe, I see very skinny cats, which are very good looking. You know, they're very like sleek, you know, animal-like. They're not like fat, lazy cats.
What about dogs?
I heard stories of dogs. Someone was talking about how if a dog gets near you, you should strike out or run because there's rabies. Someone had a story that his brother or something got bit yesterday, like outside a movie theater, which I was impressed he was at a movie theater. apparently, I don't know how this happened, but the dog just bit him, you know, just angry dog. So I haven't seen any dogs. Definitely not as a pet either.
Yeah.
There must be street dogs, though. Any other animals I've noticed? I've seen some birds running around. Oh, yeah, people have, once you get behind the walls, I've been in one or two houses, there's beautiful gardens. That's the coolest thing. Like, I walked in to a, like, courtyard today, somebody's house off the, like, ridiculous-smelling street, and as soon as I walked through the door, there were trees, there was a garden, and it smelled great. It's amazing how the air can change just by going through a door into a courtyard. So there are these beautiful things every now and then. The mountains that surround Kabul are, I find them to be amazing. When the plane landed, it was like, I didn't want that plane ride to end because, well, except that I was afraid someone would shoot at it or something in my imagination. But the mountains, you know, people always talk about how mountainous this place is. It's amazing to look at from the air. And it's no wonder, like, you can't find anybody because there's so many mountains. It's how could you hunt, you know, in theory, a person or a group of people? It's just, I don't know, you know, it's weird. Every now and then choppers go overhead. Hasn't happened since I've been talking to you. Every now and then there's a Black Hawk helicopter that goes overhead. And Black Hawks aren't for combat, so I don't know what they're doing. They must be transferring important people or something.
Yeah, sure. Well, I deal with a lot of Black Hawks, too.
Yes, Black Hawk.
Mm. Oh, right.
With an H, yeah. Mm-hmm. Although that'd be a good name, you know. Artist name.
So, why are we there?
You know, we're there because September 11th was such a huge event for the United States. And I say that because when I'm over here, I start thinking, like, September 11th was bad, but, like, your entire country as a shithole, you know, or never mind a shithole, that's kind of cruel, but I think it's worse, you know, what's going on here. It's worse than September 11th. I don't know if we should be comparing.
But what does it have to do with what does it have to do with each other? I mean, what does that horrible place with all those extremists, how would that, why does that, I'm not saying it doesn't, but I mean, why does that have a correlation to what terrorists would do on our, here in New York and blah, blah, blah. What does that have to do with it?
When I look at how things work, and I need more time for this, but when I look at how things work, I can see how, you know, say they controlled the country as they did during the time of 9/11, the Taliban. I could see how they wouldn't stop there. I don't know, you know, if they'd go marching beyond their borders, but that they would allow people to work on hideous, you know, plans and schemes and have training camps. Yeah, I could see how they did that. You know, like, I could see them allowing that here. And that is scary to think about, because the world is connected. You know, I got here from Amsterdam pretty easily. You know, so I'm not saying, like, we're here because we need to stop them here before they get there. I like to think, no matter what the politicians say, we were late, way late, but we're here because this place needed help. You know, like, the Cambodians needed help and didn't get it. You know, I think there are times, you know, people talk about Nazi Germany, and rightfully so, you know, something needed to be done. Then, you know, what we can get into is how to do it, and that's where it's weird. So even though the political excuse is 9/11 and Al-Qaeda, I still think, like, late as it is, and very late, and poorly executed, and the word executed is bad because a lot of innocent people are being killed, and that's ridiculous. You know, U.S. military, I don't know about their policies sometimes. But someone needed to stop, you know, the Taliban, and I don't think that, well, I don't know, but I have my doubts that it would have come from within. It just doesn't feel that way. But you know what, I need to talk to people who know better, because I don't know enough to really properly answer that. The weirdest part is I get the feeling we'll be gone sooner rather than later, and I think we'll be gone too early. We'll see what happens. But, you know, the Dutch have left. and the Polish, well, not that they're that important. I don't know how many troops they have, a few thousand maybe. They're leaving. Who else is leaving? There's a list now of who's leaving in the coming 4 or 5 years. And my feeling is that, especially the Dutch, actually, I've heard the Dutch were doing very well in terms of they had great, and this is what I like, not that they were blowing up, you know, bad guys, which, okay, but maybe that's something, but they, I heard that they had really good relations with tribes and with communities in places that people would consider very difficult to understand and to get along with. I heard the Dutch had, you know, they were good with people. That's what I hear. But things started, you know, there were some bad things that happened and people died, and the Dutch didn't want to stay. And they also had said from the beginning, and that's where this is hard, and I sound like a politician, but when people tell you, look, we're going to go to Afghanistan, we're going to occupy it, or I mean, we're going to get rid of the Taliban, and we'll be gone in 10 years. I write it down, sign it. And it's like, you know what, actually, life is so complicated and sad sometimes that I think you can't make that kind of promise because you don't know.
Yeah.
And we spend money on so many bizarre things, including war, but I'm almost willing, and we could have done it, you know, we could have used our money more wisely to sort of help police or train and prepare a country that can't do it on its own, because I just don't think this place can do it on its own. Yeah. We know it can't do it on its own because it wasn't able to in the time where we ignored it or secretly, you know, did things. Anyway.
Okay.
Anything today is, yeah. I had a funny moment, just one more. I was in a jewelry store today. I was in a couple. They really liked their jewelry. It's amazing. And some foreigners, very few, but some foreigners would walk in and speak different languages, and the Afghan guys try and find the language they can speak to. Some of them can even do French. Russians, a lot of Russians were walking in and speaking in Russian, and the shop owner would respond in Russian, and I was like, wow. You know, like this is old enemies. You know, in my mind, I'm thinking of like the old Afghan war against Russia, and it's like, yeah, it's amazing how time changes and flies, and things can change.
Especially when there's money involved.
Yes, they're there to buy, but but also that, you know, I don't think the shop owner, I could be wrong, but I don't think the shop owner, like, under his teeth or was thinking like, fuck these guys. I think the shop owner was thinking, I've met these guys before, I've been meeting Russians for a while, you know, they're not all here to, you know, they weren't involved in what happens, and I don't know, I just felt like he wasn't holding a grudge, which is important, I think.
Yeah.
And that's how it works, right? I mean, you can't be mad at Japanese people about World War II. Maybe they should be still mad at us, but we managed to sort of get over, you don't forget the past, but you learn that shit that they told you when you were supposed to hate that country was bullshit. Because when you meet the individuals, you realize people are just like me. And actually, I get that feeling a lot when I meet Afghani people, be they young or old. You know, it's weird because they're a little poor. They need to, you know, I have money, I guess. They think I have money. So that's a weird relationship. But when it comes down to it, I smile at a guy and I love what they do. When they say hello, they put their hands on their hearts.
Yeah.
And I think it's beautiful. I put my hand on my heart too. And I say, you know, salamu alaikum, and I try. I'm still learning. I just got here. But and they always want to shake your hand. And an old man did this to me on the street today in front of a shop. And he said, I didn't think he would speak English. He was so old. And he looked at me and he said, what do you need? And he wanted to sell me something, I guess. And I looked at him and I said, you know, actually, I need sandals. And he had no sandals in his shop. And he looked down the street and he was like, maybe. And he took two steps. He looked and then he goes, no, today no good. This shop, two shops down, good shop for sandals. Maybe you come back another day and they're open. And then he shakes my hand again. And it was like, you know what? We're the same. My grandfather's the same way. You know, like, you know, old things that we've talked about for ages, that well, these differences people, that we're told, they're not real.
People seem to generally be okay as individuals. It's the groups that are the problem. They become something different. The groups.
Yeah. People in groups are scary.
Okay. Well, thanks for talking to me. I'll be interested to see how your opinion changes, if it does. Well, yeah. I'm sure it will.
I think it's already changing. I don't know what to say about it. You know, I feel kind of like I'm going back on things that I've said, but
yeah,
I've never seen anything like this in my life, you know.
All right. Well, I will stay in touch.
Yep.
And
yeah.
Stay safe.
Sounds good.
All right.
I will.
Okay.
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.